7-1.
Let's go. Let's go.
You're about to experience action like you've never heard it before. Action sports, celebrities, badasses, and massive interviews. All coming to you from the Polaris Razor Studio. This is Jim Beaver's Project Action, exclusively on Podcast One.
Welcome to this week's Project Action on Podcast One. Jim Beaver here, knocking this one out. Yes, I am on holiday. It is Christmas break, and that means we're running some of the best interviews of the year right here over the holidays on Project Action. Today's guest does not disappoint. Throwing it back to earlier this year with my good friend Jason Ellis. Yes, you know him from SiriusXM fame, pro skateboarder, one of the he's just a badass. But anyways, anytime you get Ellis on, things are fun, and this interview did not disappoint. So we're going to get to that. Make sure and go over to iTunes if you haven't already. Hit that subscribe button to Project Action. Much appreciated for those of you who do. And if you are over there on iTunes or Apple Podcasts hanging out, make sure and leave a rating. Please hit us 1 through 5 stars. We won't tell you how to rate us, but please do so. And if you leave a review, much appreciated. And if you leave your Twitter or Instagram at username in the body of the review, and when I see it, I will follow you back on social media. My promise to you. So getting to those partners, you know, we got our good friends there at betonline.ag. And right now we're in the middle of our Sportsnet Challenge. And you know what that means? That means each and every week, the top host on Podcast One Sportsnet, we are giving away $500. And that's paid out to 5 different fans of my show. If I win our Sportsnet Challenge, each of you are going to take home $100. It's going to be applied to your betonline.ag account so you can get in on the action and some of the best betting in the business. And our Sportsnet Challenge is just a pick 'em contest. I'm actually doing pretty solid in it. Slipped in the rankings just a little bit, had some upsets. But we are definitely cranking there, and I'm up at the top, not definitely at the bottom. So it's been fun to do that pick 'em contest. So follow along each week, and you got a chance to win some cold hard cash for your betonline.ag account. And you know, speaking of them, they are our exclusive partner here at Podcast One Sportsnet. And you know what? Take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account today, and make sure and use the promo code Podcast One, and you're going to get a 50% sign up bonus. Week 17, biggest matchups in the NFL. We got Chicago at Minnesota, Tennessee at Houston, San Fran at Seattle, Pittsburgh at Baltimore, Green Bay at Detroit. In the NBA, it's Clippers at Lakers. Huge game. Boston at Toronto, Milwaukee at Philly. College football bowl games. We've got the Holiday Bowl, USC and Iowa, Cotton Bowl, Penn State and Memphis. Camping World Bowl, Notre Dame and Ohio State, Fiesta Bowl, Ohio State versus Clemson, huge Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, LSU at Oklahoma, another huge game. Visit betonline.ag. Don't forget, use that promo code PODCAST1. You're going to get a 50% sign-up bonus. Betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And you know, we got our good friends over there at Geico, and they want to remind you, everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pay some bills, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is, you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do, go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you listening right now, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket just may be the most rewarding thing that you do today. And with that, we are going to roll right into this interview with Jason Ellis. All right, I'd like to welcome back to the show one of my good friends, Jason Ellis. Dude, I was just looking, Ellis. September 2016 was the last time I had you on one of my shows. Before that, we'd done a couple of them. But, dude, it was a day before you got engaged. So I'm looking back, and I'm like, man, it's been a long while, my friend. Yeah. Like, wow, dude, that's that's way too damn long. But I guess now congrats on the engagement, the wedding, and everything else, man.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was a while back, but yes, I did accomplish that. So thank you.
Yeah. No, how is things, dude? Because I know, like, I've known you for a while, but, you know, and I've followed your career and everything. Dude, like, I got to say, you seem fucking happy right now, man. I mean, like, things are, it's good to be Jason Ellis, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't think it was ever bad to be me. I just think that I managed to make it seem bad in my own head, thanks to my own issues in life, you know, because I don't, looking back on all of it, I mean, sure, there was some tough times, but it's all in all, it's been pretty good.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, we're going to switch gears all over the place because that's just the way I am. But I this is something like I've been studying for a long time, but like last week you went down to Columbia, got some stem cell work done. Dude, how was that? And I got a question, like, it's to me this whole thing is bizarre because like that company BioAccelerator, they're based out of Phoenix, Arizona, but like you've got to go down to Columbia to actually get treatment, right? I mean, like to me this whole thing
it's illegal to get umbilical stem cells.
Yeah, and to me, I mean, that's just crazy that we've got that hang up here in the United States. But how was the whole process going down there and things like that? I mean, were there any nerves? Like, I mean, take me through this, dude, because this is something I've put some time into studying.
I mean, I really wasn't that nervous. I've had stem cells before in America where they take it out of your own body and then they spin it on the plates and put it back in, and there's just way less stem cells because they're taking it out of a 40-year-old man. So they, you know, they disappear as you get older. So obviously an umbilical cord would have the most stem cells that you could possibly get. And I talked to the doctor about it. Like they have, you know, couples and it's C-section only and they sign off on it and they check their hereditary thing, like to make sure that there's no potential diseases or anything with the couple. And, you know, they get the money and they have the baby and they give them the umbilical cord after the baby's born. No harm, no foul, nobody gets hurt. They get the money, and then the doctor sells it to me and sticks it in me, and it's, like, scientifically proven to heal your torn ligaments and arthritis and tendonitis and stuff that nobody else can fix. It's not scientifically – they'll give you knee surgery, but they won't – they can't cure it. Like, I'm like, I have no PCLs in both my knees, and now I have no meniscus in my left knee, and my right knee's meniscus is torn as well. So my knees are, like, destroyed. There's no knee. So I have to get a knee surgery in my left knee to prevent a knee replacement and the PRP and the stem cell. And then you don't just get walking around knees. You get skateboard fighting knees. Like you get knees like I had. Well, I wouldn't go that far, but you know, I'm 47, man. And my knees and I'm going to fight in 3 months and I'll be as fit as I've ever been.
Does it, you know, talking about that, I mean, shit, you're going to be as fit as you've ever been, but how much harder is it for you to train now? I mean, like, you're talking about that this fight's 3 months out. Do you feel like the whole process of training and to get to, like, that peak fighting shape, I mean, does it take you longer now? I mean, I'm 38, dude, and I got to tell you, like, I get ready for a race or something like that, and I used to, you know, not have to do anything, just jump in the car and go. Like, now there's a whole process and buildup, and it seems like every single year that process takes a little bit longer to get myself there, you know?
Yeah, I think maybe it's just I really enjoy the process. When you're not really competing like I used to, and now it's just sort of for fun. You know, when I was a skateboarder, it was for life or death. Now it's just things that keep me amused. They're my hobby. And if I do the sauna thing, and I stretch, and I use these hip flexors, and I get acupuncture, and I do the frozen. I have a frozen tub in my garage that I sit for 3 minutes every day. That if you're not used to it, you would find that the most painful thing ever. But that's the process to me. So yeah, I guess I do all these other things that I didn't do when I was 27 that allow me to wake up and go to the gym like I'm 27. Because it really is. I grew up with, I didn't stretch. I was top three in the world, and I was not aware that you stretched or did anything. There was no personal trainer. I'd never heard of any of it. You know, so when you start that low, and then you get 20 years later and you're an old man or getting older, whatever, your body's hurt from all these injuries. Well, now I add all these things that everybody was aware of for years, and it seems to even it up. And the mindset, you know, I really didn't think about things when I was younger. I just went. Now I'm like, what would be the best way to go about this? And you know, because of all the error in my trials, I just seem to have figured out a nice little pocket here, really.
Yeah, well, and isn't that the truth? You know, it's said all the time, right? I wish we would have known what we knew now 20 years ago, you know, but even if we did.
The worst thing is you did know it, you just weren't listening. Yeah. People weren't telling you it. I mean, for me, I was being told, I just didn't hear it.
Yeah, we just didn't care, right? I mean, truth there. Like, you know, they can tell you, but when you're that age, you know everything, and nobody can tell us anything, right? We're going to do what we're going to do. So
that's your life, man. Yeah, give it your shot. Do it your way.
So going back to the stem cells, though, I mean, you know, obviously you go in, you get this, you know, this process done in Columbia and stuff like that. I mean, is that like one of those where it's like instantly within a day or so, like you're noticing things, or does it take a while, you know what I mean, for things to kind of set in and things like that? Or is it just like an instant, you know, flip of the switch, like a day later, you're like, damn, I can feel the difference?
Oh, no, no way. It's, I mean, the first of all, there's no anesthesia. They just stick these giant needles inside your bones or whatever it is, or in your tendons. And then you're pretty sore immediately after. And then the next day, because I got my ankle, both knees, and my shoulder. So I was in a wheelchair the next day because I couldn't really walk.
Okay.
And that hurt. But not real, not like broken bone hurt. It just ached.
Yeah.
And then the next day, not as bad. And I was out of a wheelchair and I hobbled myself on an airplane back to America. And then the third day, I barely limped. So, but I have different injuries. So my knees, I can't tell if they're any better. And my ankle, you know, I'm not allowed to use it yet. I'm allowed to work out in a couple more days, but take it easy. But to me, the one that my shoulder always ached, because I've torn my clavicle and I've separated and broke my collarbone, tons and tons of damage on both sides. But the left one from boxing, because I throw jabs the most, that's what a boxer does. I've slowly torn and loosened that thing up. So now it just aches constantly. It has ached for a year and I just don't care. I just I rub CBD, THC cream and, you know, put the freaking massage ball in there. And that's just my life. And I just got used to it. But since I got those shots and the initial pain went away from just getting the shots, my shoulder doesn't hurt anymore. So that it's not aching.
Yeah.
So I don't know about the rest. I still have to wait a couple of months for the rest. But from what I hear, Chuck Liddell went before me. Matt Hughes went before me. I checked these dudes out. They're doing MMA fighters. And I feel like those guys are really hurt. They know what's up.
Yeah.
So I feel good about it.
Yeah, those are some good guys to follow. I mean, shit, if you're going to follow anybody, those guys, you know, they know what the hell they're doing. So.
Yeah, and they're hurt. I know. I watched it.
Yeah. Well, it was funny you mentioned CBD cream and THC cream and stuff. I start laughing because...
Are you into that?
Yeah, you know, I'm in Arizona, so the THC stuff, unless you've got your card, you know, it's not quite legal. I use CBD just about every day, though. With non-THC.
If you use THC with CBD in the cream, not to take, I'm trying to say, it reacts even better. Because I used to rub the Tiger Balm thing on my shoulder every day before I box. And now somebody gave me this CBD THC cream. Was it Care by Design or something? But it works better and it doesn't have that crazy smell that you have on your hands after Tiger Balm. So it's pretty good.
Yeah. No, it's made a difference.
You can't do it.
What's that?
You can't have it, though.
No, not the THC. I can't. Just standard.
What kind of bullshit is that?
It's because it's Arizona. We're one of the medical-only states. I guess it sounds like next year they're going to – they put it to vote to have it for recreational use, anything with THC, like I think it was two years ago, and it literally went down to a couple hundred votes in the entire state. It got turned down. So now – they're talking about going back here, I think, this next year, and they're going to put it back to a vote, and I think it's going to pass. It's going to be crazy how quick it passes. So I think we're going to be opened up just like California here probably in the next 2 years is my guess, because we've already got the infrastructure with the dispensaries.
I mean, have you been down here? Nothing's changed. The world didn't get – L.A. didn't catch on fire when it happened, you know?
No. You know, and it's funny – it's funny because there's a place in Studio City. I go and do some TV voiceovers, and I was in Studio City last year, and I'm walking down the street, and I had an hour to kill, and, you know, here's this little coffee shop, and I go in there and get something to drink, and then I walk next door, and here's this, you know, dispensary. I swear this place was the cleanest, nicest place, and it's in, like, this really nice district. Like, you would have never known they were selling marijuana in there unless you knew.
No, they look like Mac shops.
Yeah, it was like I was blown away. I'm like, wow, I walked in and started, you know, just shooting the shit with people and, talking with them and super nice. But yeah, no, Nevada's the same way. I mean, I do find it funny. Like I go to SEMA trade show and they got a dispensary across the street from the convention center there. And there's literally people like lined out the door wrapped around the block waiting to go in. And there are people from overseas and other places where they can't, you know, that stuff's still way illegal. You know,
they can't
states.
Believe it. Right.
Yeah, but it's funny. Because there's like a line of people just half a mile long waiting to go in there. But yeah, no, nothing's changed in California. And it's kind of one of those, like I've always felt like if people are going to do it, are going to do it one way or another, you know? So, and it's not hurting anything.
It'd be better if people didn't frown upon it so hard, you know? Because I feel like, sure, you know, you little kid out there being a loser. Well, I don't care what you got in your hand. If you're wasting your youth, you are an idiot. But you know, when you're a grown ass man or you know, a lady, and you want to, why does everybody have to get weird about it? Because if you can have a beer after work, you should be able to smoke some weed. It doesn't, I mean, I've done both. I know which one's worse.
There's truth in that. But no, I agree with you, man. I think, well, and, you know, going back to the CBD thing, though, like I travel probably, you know, just like you. I mean, I'm on the road all the time, and I've kind of seen a corner turn. Like, I'm in these really niche places in the United States, and I'm like, man, here's people like talking CBD, selling it. I feel like that's kind of been a gateway to the bigger THC discussion. Just because I think CBD is becoming more acceptable now, so I think it's kind of becoming a gateway to making this THC conversation just a little bit more open, you know?
I mean, when I used to skateboard a lot and I broke a lot of bones, like, frequently, I started smoking more weed because the painkillers made me angry. Like, they really started to mess with me. I feel like maybe painkiller, the companies of to make all that stuff, are not fans of marijuana, because it's like, longevity-wise, if you're hurt, that, you mean, the option of an opioid versus smoking some weed, you know, you obviously the weed's going to be better. An opioid is, you know, it's been proven you can't just take that every day for the rest of your life. That really does damage. So I think maybe it's got something to do with that too, because I figured that one out accidentally when I was a kid. Nobody taught me that one. I figured it out.
Yeah. Well, and that's the truth, man. Anything like that, like, I've had some severe back injuries, and, you know, I you know, take one or two pills.
It doesn't surprise me the way you drive.
No joke. I actually got my first injury playing football. But yeah, for those of you that don't know what Ellis is talking about, first time we actually met was in San Diego at Del Mar at Terracross. And
this is all I know of you. This is how you introduce yourself.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, why? I went in there. I'm this trophy truck guy, right? And I had a little bit of an arrogance and a chip on my shoulder. And I went in there, dude. It was yard sale, train wreck. Like, dude, I was humbled in a hurry there, man. It was bad. There's videos on the internet somewhere.
For everybody to jump. That was like a tabletop. It was like a gap, though, right?
It was a gap jump, and I came up short, and you know, and yard sailed it.
And you went all the way over too. Like, you nosedived, I think.
I nosedove into the backside of the landing and just tumbled. And they didn't total that car. They ended up putting it together, and then I go back out there, and then like a lap or so later, did the same damn thing over again, and I was just like, I'm over it, you know. But
it was spectacular.
Yeah,
you were the best guy there for sure.
Yeah, I made the intro to the TV show for the year, so I guess I got my TV time one way or another. Yeah, that was one of those. You know what though? I went back, and you know, I'm one of those guys. Like, it was bad. That was a yard sale, and I went back, and I was like, man, I'm successful at trophy trucks and everything else. I got to figure this out. Well, 3 years later, I stayed in the series, figured it out, and I lost out the last year I did it, the championship, by one single point to Hubert from Nitro Circus. So, I finally figured it out.
You got to figure it out.
Yeah, it took me 3 years of doing that, because that's totally different than trophy truck. But it's kind of like you and your short course, though, dude. I mean, you started out, and like you said, you were winning races there at the end. I mean, you put in the work, and you did the time, and you figured it out, right?
Yeah, I mean, for those particular tracks, you know, I'm not familiar with all the other stuff when it comes to motorsports. But, yeah, I think that, I figured that out. I was okay to hang out there with people that I thought were way better than me, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure some of these people's cars are better than mine. I'm like, holy shit, you're okay. And that's all I really wanted to do. I just wanted to be in the mix. It's so bummed that I'm not in that anymore. I still dream that somehow, some way, I will figure out a budget to be back in that, but it's a little too expensive for me.
Yeah. Well, have you ever done anything in the desert? I mean, I got a fleet of razors, dude. I mean,
I talk to the Hoonigan guys all the time, and those guys are like, you should do this. And I'm like, I'll do it. And then they don't do it. Every time they say, I say yes. I'll go anywhere and drive anything at any time. And they're like, we should totally do it. I guess we're pitching a Netflix show, but you know how that goes. But until then, that's my thing. I just keep saying yes to anybody when it comes to motorsports. I was going to go on a monster truck on Friday, and then they were like, oh, wait, you can't drive it. Anybody calls me and says, does Jason want to drive something? I go, yeah. I don't even care what day it is. I'm just going to go and do it. And I figure, you know, I know this. I know I'm not one of you. I know I'm not. I can't fix a car. I don't hang out in Temecula or any of that. I mean, I live in Hollywood Hills like a dickhead. And I'm not in it. I don't have a buggy tattoo. I'm not completely in. I don't know enough. If I knew enough, I could build my own car and then race every asshole. But I can't do that, so I have to use this other angle where I just, anybody says motorsports to Jason, he says yes. And then hopefully that'll pan out.
You know, it's funny because I had last year, Dax Shepard came and raced with me at the UTV World Championship, and he did three laps in my car, and then I jumped in and did the rest. And Dax told me, he's like, I'm a professional race car driver that never made it. He goes, I became an actor.
He's the worst driver
ever.
Yeah. He always says that. I'm a way better driver than him. Yeah. Tell him that.
Yeah. No, but he goes, you know what? He's like, I learned I wasn't going to make it as a race car driver. So he's like, I became an actor. So now I can afford to fund my addiction of, you know, razors and buggies and whatever the hell else. So.
Which is a way better angle. Cause that's the other thing, by being in motorsports, it's tough work, man. Everybody's working real hard all the time. That's how they get that thing to be quick. And when you're just shiny pants asshole and you show up with a quick car, then you go back home, you're the winner. I don't know how you pull that off, but that's a winning combination.
Absolutely. Dude, we should be able to get you on there. I'll text Scotto and I'll be like, hey, dude, I got the race car sitting here. What's it going to take to get, you know, let's put Ellis in here. You know, like I'm out
racing.
He'll
tell you for sure it's a done deal, and then it won't happen. He's the worst. I love him. He always tries to help me at all. I still don't understand why when they're like, man, we're pitching this show for you. I'm like, what? Out of all the people that you sponsor, it's the fish out of water angle I think everyone's going for. But I'm very happy. I don't know. Maybe it's because Ken likes me. I don't know. Maybe Ken tells Brian to be nice to me. I'm not really sure how it goes, so I'm very grateful. But who to get it? All those people that are ridiculously nice to me. Like I said, I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, you went drifting over there, right? A couple months back?
Yeah, I learned how to the other day. Yeah.
Dude,
yeah,
how
first
was
time
that?
I actually got the car to, like, got actual control. Like, I've drifted before because obviously we've driven outdoor vehicles, so you obviously understand how to do that. But I've never just tried to stay drifting at all times, in a car that's more like that. I tried like two times, I think once in Utah at the Nitro Circus thing, and I span out a couple of times, and my son made fun of me, and then the Hoonigan guys gave me a go in the, what's that car called?
I don't know what it's called. It's kind of a Medusa-looking thing.
Something, I don't know. But yeah, I figured it out. I understand what it takes to drift a car around and around and around. That's all I wanted. So I said to him, like, hey, you guys are doing stuff you never invite me. I think they think I'm going to crash the car.
Well,
they could be right.
Well, you know, the thing is like I had the opportunity, and I'm like you. I race off-road. I've slid cars. You've slid cars. It was like 2-3 years ago at SEMA. Ryan Turk, he was doing some demos with Von Gittin. He's like, hey, jump in the car with me. And they were doing these demos. I'm like, yeah, I'll jump in with you, Turk. Yeah. And I didn't realize how much car control those guys have. I mean, a guy like Block or Vaughn or Ryan, like how they can, like, I mean, put that car within inches of a wall and exactly where they want it to be. Like, it blew my mind how good these drivers are, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I reckon it's really difficult. The better I got at it, the more I realized how much better everybody here was at it. It was impressive.
Yeah. So I know this, I've been watching you on Instagram, dude. I'm kind of jealous. You've been doing some stuff, the Indy 500, Dew Tour. Like, you guys are doing some rad remotes there with Sirius, man.
Yeah, well, I think since the new channel, it was a bit rocky for a while there, but we've got a new boss who just seems to be super gung-ho about the Jason Ellis show, and then sort of it's more of a, instead of the, I think the CEO has sort of stepped in. I met him at the Indy 500, and he knew the show, and I'm like, holy crap, like, usually the highest of high don't talk to the talent, which is weird to say, but I was just used to it. I've been there for a long time, but he wants to know me, and he's a supporter, and yeah, we're going to do tours, and we're going to X Games. We went to Winter X Games. We were trying to go to Monster Truck. Like, we're all about it. We're going everywhere now. And Sirius XM is just 100% behind us. It seems like I talked about a bus tour the other day, and they were like, yeah, all you need is the bus. If you can, because I have a new energy drink sponsor, Outlaw Energy. And they were like, we really love the show. We'd love if you toured. And I'm like, well, man, it costs money to tour. You know that, right? And he's like, well, let's talk about a budget for a bus or something. Because if you have a bus where you have the sh- show can play in the bus,
yeah.
Well, then we're that's unstoppable.
Dude, that'd be fun. You could go to some random ass spots,
right? That's what I'm saying. People could do a show out the front of someone's house.
Yeah,
like a fan. You know what I mean? Like just go to his house, and we've got a you know had a, like a little band or something. We could play in his bathroom or something. They got all kinds of ideas.
Dude, that would be that'd be awesome. Just go on a road for a couple of months and just you never know where the hell it's going to pop up. You know, that would be the excitement. And you know, fans would see the bus rolling through, and they'd be going, you know, they'd be going ape shit crazy.
A couple months might be a little tough.
you mean you're not going full on rock star, just tour for 3 months, 4 months at a time, and just like.
I got a lot of tattoos, but I've also got a lot of children, and I'm not what I look like.
So what's a tour for you look like? Maybe 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah, two weeks, gotcha. So how was the 8500?
I could do 2 weeks and then another 2 weeks, but no, I'm not doing a month anywhere.
You need a breather in between. That's me, dude. I get on the road so much.
I'm not leaving my kids for longer than that. It's too long already. I'm like, I'll do 2 weeks if it's just, you know, I mean, this big event and it's worth it, because then, okay, I make sacrifices, but... If it's not a really big deal, I'm not hanging out with my kids.
Yeah. Last summer, I took my daughter, she's 10, and I had to go do some events. I just brought her with me last year, and she had a blast, man.
Yeah, you think I could have my kids on the radio show? Have you heard the show? Come on.
Yeah.
You know what? They both know, but it's different. It's like, sure, they know. They're very aware of, you know, I mean, all cussing and whatnot jokes, but... That's different than that, and just giving them 3 hours of it a day. That's not cool.
Yeah. You know, and that's funny, though, because you talk about that, and, you know, your kids at some point are going to turn, you know, they're going to turn 18, 20. They're going to start, you know, obviously they understand now, but you feel like, you know, everything that you've put out there in the air, like at some point when they're older, it's going to allow them to understand their dad more?
Yeah. I mean, I've always had to deal with that because I've always worried about, you mean the being openly bisexual and all the stories that I've told, the things that have happened to me, I'm like, what's that going to do to the kids? People are going to pick on the kids when they find that out. It's going to turn back on them. But, you know, the more I thought about it, that's why I was okay with it. I thought, you know, I'm not hurting anybody, and this is who I am, and I'm just being honest about it. And if people don't like that, people can react any way they want to, and you can judge me any way you want. And if you're my kids watching me and how I'm judged for what I do, it's just, if you're a decent person, which I believe my children are, cause I raised them that way, there's no harm, no foul in this. You know, like dad was who he was. And I'm happy that dad was able to live as himself. Cause I think that's a big deal for everybody. If you are that person, come out, you know, cause it's not that. If you're going to be vibed or disliked by some people, hey, that's life. You know, learn to live with it.
Yeah.
So I had to think about that a lot before I talked about all that stuff. So yeah, I know they're going to hear all that. It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. They could say at some points in their life, this is harder than it should have been. If I had a normal dad, you could say that if you wanted to. I'm prepared to live with that. It's not easy, but.
Yeah.
But I also think that will, you know, strengthen them and make them understand that, you know, not everybody's the coolest or, you know, or whatever you want them to be. They're them.
Yeah. But, you know, all that being said, the kids also know growing up they had a solid dad figure in their life, you know. So it wasn't like you're this non-existent prick that was out there doing all kinds of crazy shit and you know, had no relationship with the kids. Like, they know who you are at home behind closed doors, you know.
Well, that is the, you know, I know, like I said, I look. You know, I got too many tattoos and I act crazy, but I mean, they're number one to me, and they know that. Same with their mother, that, you know, I mean, we're level-headed parents that go to school meetings and we care, and they know that they know that they are loved, and we're open-minded. Not, I mean, when you think about it on the scale of parenting, we're very aware. You know, my brain works. Believe it or not, I know how to raise a child. We make mistakes, obviously, constantly, but that's being a parent too. But they're pretty solid. They're doing really good, actually.
That's awesome. Well, and, you know, and I think, you know, I think with the way you have and you've approached them and just life in general, man. It's going to let them, it's going to allow them, you know, it's going to be a lot easier for them to find themselves as they get older. And I think that's what, you know, I think we've got people in this country still, you know, they're 40s, 50s, 60s. They never really found themselves. They don't know who they are. They don't know when they look in the mirror, what's looking back at them, you know? And I think somebody like you, you've been through that process, you know, and I think it'll help your kids, you know, find out who they are later on, you know?
I mean, it's helped me, you know, ever since I started down this journey of just being completely open to who I am, no matter how odd it is. Sure, it's been tough. Like, I mean, I recall several times where I'm like, man, maybe I shouldn't have been that open about stuff. But here now, I mean, this far through it, I'm just way happier of a person day to day with who I am, because I know everyone knows who I am. If you know me, you know that I do that. And if you like it or you don't, no harm, no foul. I'm cool with you too. Whatever weird stuff everybody else does, I've accepted more now as well, because I realize that people have had to take a step to accept the way that I live. So it's actually helped out tremendously all the way around. Because I just look at it like, if I'm going to get butthurt because you don't understand me, well, then I'm not going to do this. It doesn't work if I do the same. I have to understand whatever you are, whatever religion, whatever it is you are. If I don't get it or the way you live your life, well, then maybe I need to get some more information and assess it, you know, with an intelligent mind, not just be like, oh, I don't understand that. Like, you know, give me a chance. I'll give you a chance. Makes things way easier. I'm less angry, because I was an angry person. Still am, but that just makes me happier.
Yeah, I think we all are a little bit angry, though, behind the scenes. Not behind the scenes, but I think we've all got that little bit of anger in us. I mean, I just think that's human nature, a part of it, you know?
Yeah.
But
yes, no, it's definitely, it's like a thing you have to fight, but you can't fight it if you don't know it's happening. You have to pick it up first and realize that it's happening, accept it, and then start to work on it, you know? But if you're just in denial that you're not an angry person, well, then it's going to be a long night.
Yeah. How has radio helped with this whole evolution? Like, I know I do 3 shows a week and I'm not on near as much as you, but, you know, it's right around 4 hours a week I'm on air, but, you know, on 3 different days. But, like, it's helped me, you know, I can honestly say, because you've got to talk, you've got to, you know, reflect on yourself, you're interviewing people. I mean, it's helped me in my process. How has radio, I mean, I got to think this has really helped you in your process, right? Find yourself and your, you know, and the openness and things like that.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, it's like therapy is kind of, you know, you're kind of telling somebody a bunch of stuff. Obviously, a therapist is good, you know, rebuttal with a lot of intelligent information to help you out. But just getting stuff out, even if it was to a wall, I think it's therapeutic. And if I'm telling people, you know, I mean, potentially millions of people every day about things that go on or my opinions, and then I hear their opinions back, you know, to me, it's one of the most valuable things that's ever happened to me. I mean, I get the therapy out, I get to talk, but then the fulfillment of people hit me up constantly saying how much I helped them. You know what I mean? I'm just some dickhead from Australia that was into skateboarding, and now I've got, you know, thousands of DMs about how, man, looking for you, blah, 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 all the time. I'm like, man, these people, there's so many of them, they can't be all lying. I think I really am helping people. And then, you know, you can't get much better than that. People just keep reminding how you're helping them. I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah,
I'm very lucky, man. It's a really good job.
Yeah. Did you ever have any struggle? Like, I know there was a point in my career here, and, you know, I'm making a full living doing radio now and podcasting, but, like, I struggled with where I turned the corner. I still race, you know, 6-7 times a year, but I was a professional radio host, and I kept, you know, part of me was like, no, I'm a professional race car driver, and then at some point I'm like, no, I'm not really a race car driver anymore, I'm a radio host. Did you ever struggle that transition from skateboarding into radio, where you're like, yeah, I'm not a skateboarder anymore, I'm a fucking radio host?
Yeah, well, first I had to, this is a bad trait that I've had, but first I had to hate skateboarding to get cut it clean and be like, now I am a radio guy and I'm going to be the best there ever was at radio. And then, because I was so butthurt about letting go, it was really tough to let go and not just be good at skateboarding and be known as Jason Ellis, the skateboarder. That's who I thought I was for the rest of my life. It was a weird, the only way to do it was to really sever ties and you know, move to LA and just, I didn't skate. I just did radio. That's it. And then as time heals wounds, I've been able to look back at it, look back at my career, now be like not so regretful about it and look upon it fondly. And I'm even doing it a little bit again. And, you know, I'm finally okay with being on the ramp with somebody who's way better than me. Like, it's I hate admitting it, but there was a time there I was like, I'm not going back there looking like this. You know, like I used to be able to ride this thing like a champ, and now I suck because I don't do it anymore, and I don't want to do it in front of anybody. But now I just enjoy rolling around, and I'm okay with it. But I still, I mean, you're a race car driver, dude. Like, if you don't get paid anymore or you don't do it all the time, I'm a skateboarder. You know, like, and you know what? Anybody in pro skateboarding who thinks they're hot shit can check me, and I confidently can reply back, I'm a skateboarder. I don't give a crap what any of you have to say. Like, I paid my dues.
Yeah.
I can do it as frequently or as infrequently as I choose, but it's in my blood, just like you, dude. You got to be joking me. Like, you're a race car driver. That's just all you guys are. If you don't have a car right now, it's bullshit. You are what you are. Yeah. You can tell. That's what you talk about.
Yeah. No, that's the truth. I talk about it, you know, shit, all day long, all the time. No, I, you know, and I,
dude,
still
I
race.
I still talk
so.
To people about skateboard tricks. Yeah. It's not over, ever, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I know you were on the vert ramp. I know you posted up some videos. You were back on the vert ramp, what, like a month or so ago, I think, you know, pre going in for stem cell. But yeah, I was watching. I was like, dude, I mean, like, to me, just dropping in on a vert ramp, like, I've been up there. I've done it on a BMX bike, but never on a skateboard. But damn, dude, like, if you can still drop in, like, to me, holy shit, dude, that's impressive to me. I don't care how good you are, what tricks
you can drop in on vert on a BMX.
Yeah. I used to ride in contests.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I used to ride in contests.
Dude, that's sketchy.
Yeah. So
that's impressive, man.
I liked mini ramps better than vert, but I have dropped in on a vert ramp.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. I think if it's vert, it's easier to me. Always has been.
I don't know. I was kind of like in my BMX career, I went and did a lot of amateur contests. Like, I was good, but I knew I was never going to be, you know, X Games good. Like, and I still enjoy it. Like, my daughter loves riding bikes. We go to the skate park a couple times a month, and I just flow around and I have a good time with it, but I've come to terms with, you know, things. But it was one of those, like, I was just good, but I knew I would never be next level. Like, hey, let's go get sponsors. You're going to be, you know, one of the best. I just was never that good on a bike, you know?
I don't think that's a bad thing. I feel like it's cool to be the winner and all that stuff, or be, you know, Mr. Cool Pants, but I feel like if you just really love it and you get to do it all the time, I mean, with your friends, I mean, that was the best part about my skateboard career. It was awesome to, you know, get really good and get really serious. But then you got the heartache of, you know, when you're really serious and you won't take nothing but first and you don't get first, it's heartache out there. You know, I wouldn't call that fun. But when I was just hanging out, moving, you know, skating around with my friends doing tricks all day on a Saturday for nobody, I mean, that's why you did it. You know, I feel like that's, you guys still get to do it. I mean, even that, the race you were talking about where you crashed those little buggy races,
yeah,
those things are awesome, man, because it's like you're all friends with each other, you've all known each other forever, and then they make some crazy track for you guys. It's like, have at it. I'm like, there's no, you know, the win, what's the winner really get?
Yeah.
I just want to stay out there. I don't want my car to break. That's what I want.
You don't want your car to break? Yeah,
I don't want it to. I want to stay out there for the entire race. That'll make me happy.
Well, and I know there was a story, too, going back to your first race in that, because yours wasn't quite as spectacular as mine, but you rolled pretty hard, too, right, in Minnesota. Didn't they fly you into Minnesota for your first race in one of those things? And you rolled pretty hard there, didn't you?
I got in the car by myself and didn't know that this is by anything at all, and I didn't know that the Polaris had dual drive or four wheel drive, and the seatbelt was the seat wouldn't move forward, and I couldn't reach the steering wheel, so I loosened the seatbelt so I could touch the steering wheel. And I didn't have any, and I lost my luggage, so somebody just gave me a helmet, and off I went out there. And it was that track where the Terracross thing, where it was the gap jump, and it was all muddy, and somebody came up short in front of me, and they stopped, and they had to wheel him back off. And it's, once they got him out of the way, I just pinned it and went over it, and I went sideways off the jump and landed sideways. Oh, at least I made it over, and then, you know, I mean, rolled all the way off the side. Someone comes over and goes, "Man, it was in two-wheel drive," and I have no idea what he's saying or anything. And then people start remarking when I get back to the pits that this, and this shouldn't have had that. And I'm like, "Cool, well, glad you guys just put me in a car and sent me down there. Appreciate that." So yeah,
it's one of those just pat you on the back, go do it.
It still didn't hurt like skateboarding, so it's not that bad. No, a bit scary, but. That
isn't that the advantage of having a roll cage, right? You can go and have all these spills, and yeah, you might get dinged up a little bit, but it's not like skateboarding, right? Taking a fall on a vert ramp or something.
I mean, if you stay in the slower cars, yeah, it's pretty cool. You don't get too hurt.
So I know you mentioned earlier you got Ellis Mania 19 coming up, man. I mean, I'm like just looking at 19 of these things. I mean, dude, are you? I don't know. Like, I feel like you got to up yourself every single time. I mean, you know, you've done quite a few of these at this point. I mean, you feel like Ellis Mania, this thing's become like this kind of juggernaut, and it's like you got to keep one upping yourself, almost like Ken Block's Gymkhana videos. It's like, man, we got to come up with something different this go around.
I feel like, there's been a couple I didn't think were that good. I feel like I got bum rushed into just always doing it, and I was getting sick of it. Felt like some of the fans were there for the wrong reasons, because it was just, I'm like, everyone's supposed to be having a good time here. I feel like people got a little too serious. I'm just trying to win. And I'm like, it's not supposed to be real. It's supposed to be funny. And then my fights just got too serious. It's just more about, I bet you can't kill me. And it's just silly. So I scaled back. I'm not going to Vegas this year. And I just tried to do some fun ones. I had added professional wrestling. But the one in the Ellis Mania 19, I just play it the way I ain't going to do it unless it naturally turns out to be, I should definitely do one right now. Like the one now is just because the skateboarder guy, Simon Woodstock, who's the same age as me, same weight, he fought on MTV against Mike Muir from Suicidal Tendencies and Sticky Fingers. So he's had boxing fights. And he is a skateboarder that everybody in skateboarding knows. So we're going to fight each other in Austin. And then there's some other fights that have fallen into place. And I accidentally invented another fight on the radio the other day called the Crab Fight. And everybody's pretty excited about that. So it's just fun for me. We're going to get a venue that's about 1,000 people instead of trying to do 3,000 people, which means it'll sell out real quick. And it's more about the fun of it, and it's way less about, I don't have a manager anymore. I've made some pretty cool moves. Maybe they're not that smart, but they make me happier. I don't have a manager, and I don't really do events to make money anymore. Like, I don't want to burn my money, but I'm doing Ellis Mania. I hope to come out even. I did one the other day at Irwindale Speedway. I just paid for it. I was just like, people come out, check it out. So this one, it's just more fun. There's no pressure to me. And that was the bit that was, I'm very fortunate. SiriusXM is the job, the Jason Ellis Show pays the bills. And I can do these Ellis Mania things where all the people that listen to the show and have the tattoos and name their children after me. And like, I owe them. I don't care if it makes sense. I owe them fun. I mean, you should come to Ellis Mania and laugh your ass off. That's, it's the best I could do. And I'll put in a lot of effort, and I'll train my ass off, because, as I said before, the process of training, this guy's the same age as me. It's two old dudes that used to be skateboarders that are going to fight. It's not, it's not the UFC. But make no mistake, we're old athletes, and we will put in the time, and we will give it our best shot. And this is, and he's not a dude who's gigantic or a heavyweight or a UFC fighter, so the chances of me actually getting really hurt are really small. It's more than likely he's going to get hurt, which I'm okay with. It's a skateboard thing. So it just makes things more enjoyable for everybody, I think. And then 2020, I'm going to do a big one in Vegas where I still want to do this stunt where I jump off the back of a car on my skateboard and land on a skateboard next to the car. That's the big plan. And then after that, I might retire.
Yeah, well, you guys had that planned at one point, right? I think BJ was involved, and there's a bunch of other stuff. And yeah, you guys had that planned at one point, didn't you? And something happened at the last minute. I don't even know what it was, but yeah, so it's something you still want to do, though.
Yep. Yeah, I'm gonna do it. Yeah, I'm gonna get a buggy, and I'm probably gonna go build a small one and work my way up. And then once I get it big enough, then I can take it to out front of the Hard Rock or whatever the hotel is going to be called when it happens.
Nice. Is there any point in any of these? Like, you know, you're talking about having fun. Like, I got to think, like, I still think back to, like, when you, you know, did your fight with Shane Carwin and things like that. Was there ever a point you're like, what did I get myself into? This isn't fun. This is what I signed up for?
Oh, hell yeah. In the dressing room, looking in the mirror before I went out there, I knew what was going to happen. I was like, this is the stupidest shit you have ever done, dude. When are you going to stop?
You think that's what those guys, when they're marching them to, you know, to get, you know, I guess death row inmates and stuff like that, you feel like that's what they're going through, you know, in the moment?
I mean, you can't, no, no. I mean, maybe on a really minuscule scale, but no.
Yeah.
But yeah, but a little bit. I mean, dude, like I, if you've been an athlete where you get hurt a lot, then getting hurt is not as big a deal. You know, like a normal person might think, man, this dude's like a 300-pound ex-UFC heavyweight. He could kill me with one punch. So I don't think that. I think this dude could knock me out with one punch, and then later on I'll wake up and I'll be all right because I've fucking done this, man. I've had this happen, unfortunately, a lot. It's not as bad as other people think. I know that, you know, brain, you know, doctors be like, man, you can't be doing it. I know. Can't be doing that. I should have gone to school. I should have done a lot of things differently. This is who I am. Everybody enjoy. I'm going to try and fight Shane Cowan.
Yeah, but the truth is, whether you're fighting or you're doing action sports or driving race cars at however fast we take them, like, it's stuff we shouldn't be doing, period. You know, we choose to do it. We know the risks, and, you know, you get on with life, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you make – I mean, as long as you make a conscious decision, are you okay with it? You know, I feel like a lot of my stuff is I know it's dangerous and risky, but it is still calculated. It's not suicide, you know. I don't want to die. I'm just testing myself. It's fun.
Yeah. Pushing yourself to the limits, man.
A little bit sometimes.
Sometimes. All right, Jason, man, I appreciate the time today, buddy. It's fun catching
Thanks
up.
For having
I know,
me.
I know you got some shows to do, you know, later on today, but appreciate you taking the time, man. I guess we need to do it more than once every 3 years, dude.
Yeah, man, hit me up. I'm ready when you are.
Yeah, we're gonna get you in a race car. That's my goal right now, dude. I'll text you after we get off the show. I got my wheels are turning, dude. We're gonna get you back in a race car.
Oh, I'll be there. You know, like I said, you make it happen. I'll show up.
All right.
What's up, Brian Deegan here. I'm excited to bring you our podcast, The Deegans, that will be every Wednesday on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. We'll be covering many subjects such as racing, family, how we stay together, how we thrive as a family. So I think it's exciting. We're going to cover all those subjects and many more.
Be sure you guys check out our new podcast, The Deegans, airing every Wednesday on Podcast One and on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review.